There are ghosts in the machine. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. Apple might be working on robots. We're going to get into that, plus iOS 17.5 beta and some allusions to an Apple Pencil 3. Google is out here killing even more of its services like Google Podcasts. I have some thoughts about Google Incognito Mode and Google Search. And in our bonus episode today, Jason and I are going to argue about UI and UX design in apps. This episode is brought to you by you, those who support us directly. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles, and joining me, again with fast internet, colored light backgrounds, it's a new era after just 15 episodes of Primary Technology. Jason Aiton, how's it going, Jason?
It's good. I feel like, you with your 2 gig internet and your fancy studio, the pressure just got to me, so.
The peer pressure.
Yeah.
No, but it looks good. You got the cut. And I think there's less delay because of the internet speed. I think we're even more in sync. It's going to be great. UX design, it's going to be heated.
Maybe a lightning round. But what Steven doesn't know is I'm actually just tapping into his internet. This Ethernet cable that I ran goes all the way from Michigan to
800
Florida.
Miles. Yep. 800 miles. Yep. We're going to touch on the solar eclipse at the end of the episode, but are you in the totality trajectory?
We are not. There's 1 square mile of the southeastern corner of Michigan that might be like just north of Toledo. Oh, we're a little farther north,
but I think they
estimated to be like 97%, which I mean, the difference between 97 and 100 doesn't seem like it's that much. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, we're gonna talk about that at the end, but we have a bunch of other news to cover. Before we do, some 5-star review shout outs. Thank you to those who are leaving us 5-star reviews, subscribing on YouTube. You can do all of that at the links in the podcast show notes, but Surge CJ91, thank you for your 5-star review, has some annoyances, which they might have updated their review, but also battery percentage off, favorite iPhone model, iPhone 4, 4S, couple battery percentage off people, Jason, I just want you to know, okay?
Yeah.
Like Dellen Steyerwalt, battery percentage off, thank you, as it should be. Woody1776, he gave all the things. He said he uses Apple Maps, battery percentage on, and he congratulated you on your Ethernet run in your backyard so we can do this podcast without delay.
Yeah. Woody's my man.
Easy Rand. Scody134, SL41, battery percentage on. Alvin B and B Benton, thank you for those 5-star reviews. And so give us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts, and we will give you a shout out here at the top of the show. So let's jump into the news. Apple had a few tidbits of news here. There was not a software update for VisionOS. It's still just on 1.1, which came out a couple weeks ago. But they did add a new feature, or opened it up, which is Spatial Persona. I wanted to test this with Jason, but Jason still doesn't have an Apple Vision Pro. That's okay.
I still don't.
Still do not. But now, if you FaceTime with someone, you can do share play, and instead of your digital persona being relegated to a little tile in the Vision OS and in the spatial computing, it's now kind of a disembodied bust of yourself, where your head and hands are kind of floating around. And if you do this, I saw a couple examples of it. I'm going to be trying it with someone tomorrow. You can actually interact with apps like collaboratively. So if there's like a free form window open and you guys are whiteboarding some colleagues, two people can actually scroll on the window over the FaceTime call through this like collaborative spatial persona thing. It looks really cool. People were making comparisons between this and like the Meta Workspace, where it just looks like kind of cartoony avatars in the same place. But this looks like kind of cool. I'm excited to try it. I don't know. Should we do?
You haven't done this yet, right?
I've not tried it yet.
Because do you think it's better?
Well, the fact that you could, multiple people can interact with the same piece of content in spatial computing space seems pretty cool. Like, I think that would, especially if you're like whiteboarding, creative ideas, or whatever. As far as just like a FaceTime call or share playing something, I did see one video on social media where they were like, they invited some friends over to watch a movie, but by friends, they meant their spatial personas. They were like placed in the room while watching it. I have to try it before I judge it, I think. But
I don't know if the picture we're looking at right now with the disembodied, like, view doesn't, I don't know that I feel like that's necessarily better.
Here's a video of it. This is on a 9to5 Mac, and this video was provided by Apple to the various news outlets, but you can kind of see two people floating around. It's really just head and hands, but they're both interacting with like this freeform window and moving stuff around together. It looks cool. I don't know if more interactive.
I do feel like this is very Sixth Sense. I feel like your movie quote should have been, I see dead people, because that's exactly, these look like ghosts. That's
why I said ghosts in the machine. Ghosts in the machine, this. Well, anyway, ghosts in the machine for this reason. And also the second news from Apple today is that Mark Gurman from Bloomberg said that Apple is exploring home robotics as the next big thing after their failed car project. And as far as home robotics, it seems like it's two things. One, an actual robot that maybe follows you around your house, and then also a robot arm a la HomePod with a screen that might like move and follow you around, I guess, the kitchen if you're doing that. So Apple robot, I mean, and this is something where Amazon, do you remember the name of their robot? Amazon had the little Wally rolling around thing.
That was Samsung, right? I think you're talking about the Bally one or whatever. There was a little Samsung ball that would follow you around. There may have been one from Amazon too, because Amazon has made a bunch of things. I do remember Amazon had the drone that would fly around your house and like video record your house and stuff like that. It was like a surveillance drone that you had
inside
your own house. Yeah, I don't know who this did
was.
That,
the, it was Amazon Astro.
Oh, you're talking about that? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the Amazon Astro, which was very much a robot that rolls around and has a screen. MKBHD had a video on this too. I think he had it in his studio, and you can like ask it stuff and other things. And I think it had a compartment where you could like put stuff in, like maybe a half a gallon of milk, so it could follow you home with it or something. But you know, and this is a quote unquote Skunk Works project, according to Gurman. I mean, it's very early days, much like the car project might never even see the light of day, depending on how far along they get. But the screen on the arm with the HomePod, which is something we've heard rumored for a long time, I'm still hoping for that. I still want that.
I feel like you failed in the car. So the next logical thing was to create like something that follows you around your house, right? I guess the autonomous driving part of it is probably easier when you're talking about a very small device going around your house. When you put this in the notes, I thought like, okay, well, are they going to make like vacuum cleaners or something? And to me, I'm like, Apple's not going to make a vacuum cleaner. They won't even make a Wi-Fi router, right? We can't even get them to make a Wi-Fi router anymore. There's no way that they're going to make that. But I don't understand how this, you know, there was a, in the Bloomberg article on this, I think it's the one that you had linked. There's a graph of like, the percentage of last year's revenue that each of these categories that they've introduced in, I guess, the last 40 years, how much it contributes to the revenue. And obviously the iPhone is far and away the largest one. Nothing since then, the iPad, the Apple Watch, the AirPods comes even close. And the reason they were working on a car is because it's, you know, a huge industry. There is some room for disruption there because autonomous vehicles, nobody else is doing that, despite what, you know, some branding may tell you. So it does seem like that was a massive opportunity. Same thing's true with healthcare, honestly. Apple could make, you know, we're talking about like $1 trillion impact on these types of things. I don't really see like home robots that follow you around the house and carry your beer as being the next big thing. I don't know. Do you, Steven?
I mean, no, I guess it's kind of like the next step in anthropomorphizing large language models, which
that was, whoa, hold on. I have to process everything you just said. Okay. I got it. I'm with you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, you got ChatGPT, you put ChatGPT or whatever Apple's large language model that replaces Siri is, you put it in a robot that then follows you around so you can ask it, I don't know, when the solar eclipse is, and it can tell you wherever you are, which admittedly doesn't really make much sense when you can just have HomePods in different rooms and you could just
or an iPhone in your pocket,
right? Or an Apple Watch on your wrist
with you. Yeah.
I don't. I imagine this is why it's a experimental, but
it's Skunk Works. Yes,
it is Skunk Works. Just trying it out. Just trying robots, which, you know, our friend, our mutual friend Nate from Movies on the Side, and just a good friend, he sent me a tweet where someone was like, "We have AI doing video and art and graphic design, whereas it would be much more useful if AI can do like laundry and cleaning, so we as humans could do the art and the music and graphic design," which I totally get. And, you know, I responded, the problem is things like laundry has been optimized for a human being to do, to lift the clothes out of the washer, put it in the dryer, fold it with like hands. And that part of robotics and AI is like way, like very far away. You know, actually having a humanoid type robot to do humanoid type tasks. But yes, I agree. I would love if Apple made a robot that could wash and dry and fold the clothes and put them away, but we're much farther away from that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're much farther away from it. So we'll keep doing our own laundry for a while.
That's right. Unfortunately. Although, you know, I do feel like if you had a washer and dryer, like one of those like stackable ones, and like the washer was on top, and then when the wash was done, it just kind of like opened a door and it fell into the dryer. And the dryer could just like close itself. And I feel like, could we at least expedite that process? I don't know.
You can buy an all-in-one that'll wash your clothes and then dry it in the same thing. Yeah.
I'm behind on laundry technology. Yeah. I'm going to start a new podcast, Laundry Tech, primarylaundrytech.com.
Just it's kidding. A very niche market, but
very
go,
niche.
Go for it.
Do you say niche or niche?
I said, what is it? I don't know. I said niche.
You said niche, I think. Niche. I say niche. I don't know. Is that a French word?
I don't know. There's a very small number of people who care.
Primary language technology. That'll be the next show. Okay. Also, new beta of iOS came out in all the softwares, which is iOS 17.5, which seems like a big point update, but not a lot of changes. They brought back the color matching Apple Podcast widget. So it looks like that will maybe be coming back in 17.5. It was in 17.4 beta, but then they removed it before the public release. So that's coming. And also, apps will be downloadable in the EU with 17.5. So that true sideloading you're thinking of with, like, you go to a company's website and it says download our app and it just goes onto your iPhone, that is in the EU with 17.5. Again, this is the first developer beta, not public yet, but should be coming soon. Maybe this will coincide with the release of new iPads that we've been waiting for a very long time. And there was also some code found in 17.5. A reader or a forum poster, I think in Mac Rumors, discovered that in the code, there might be an allusion to a new Apple Pencil, maybe an Apple Pencil Gen 3, or this would actually be the fourth model. You got the Lightning Pencil, the Gen 2, the USB-C version, and this would be the fourth one, maybe with a new squeeze gesture, whatever that might mean. You know, you could tap that pencil, but I don't know what you'd be squeezing.
That's what I really need is a pencil I can squeeze.
I mean, did you do the rubber pencil thing when you were in school?
Little grippy thing you put on it? Is that what you're talking about?
No. You like wobble it so it looks like the pencil's made out of rubber. It's classic. Yeah, it's classic. Yeah. That's a new feature of the Gen 4 pencil as well. Last Apple thing too. Yesterday, I don't know if you tried to use any of Apple services last night, but there was a bit of an outage. And I think I had some pretty good jokes on social media about it. But anyway.
I did hear about this, yeah.
There was a bunch of Apple services were down. The App Store, Apple TV Plus. I had people on social media were like, I was in the middle of watching a movie on Apple TV Plus and it just died, just froze or cut off or whatever. Yeah, so it was a massive outage. It's resolved now. I'll put a link to the status page you can check if you're ever wondering if an Apple service is down or not. You can actually check the status page and it'll tell you all the stuff. But, I made some jokes like, can someone at Apple Park turn it off and turn it back on again? Or Apple tried to update the free iCloud storage tier to 10 gigabytes and it took everything down. They were better jokes as read, but I wanted to do a dramatic retelling for you.
That's good. Yes. There was one other thing. I don't know if you saw this while we're talking about Apple real quickly.
Yeah.
That Alt Store, right, which is one of the alternative app stores that's going to be launching in the EU, is going to allow developers to use Patreon to sell their apps, and they're going to do a thing where basically you can turn your app off when you get to 1 million downloads so that you can avoid having to pay the core technology fee. Wow. And so my reason for bringing it up is not to dive too far into that, but I think we're about to see some very interesting things happening as developers start to poke the boundaries of what they can do. And we've already seen Apple say, this is what we're going to do. And then developers have pushed back and they're like, okay, well, actually we'll have to change that and do this instead. And I think things are going to get really interesting over there in the EU. I think you and I may need to like go record a podcast in Milan EU or something like that, or, you know, find somewhere where we can go. Cause I think it'd be kind of fun. So
I know we have listeners in countries in the EU, because the podcast analytics, it's not very specific, but it'll tell you, you know, listeners in Germany or over here. Sorry, UK, but, you know, you're not EU, Brexit and all that,
right?
I don't think that's how that works. But if you're in the EU and you listen or watch Primary Technology, this show, reach out, leave us a 5-star rating and review, and then you can tell us you're from the EU so we can ask you some questions, because it would be curious as these things happen where you can like download an app from a website. How seamless is that? And here in the US, if you work at a company that maybe distributes apps, there are actual enterprise mechanisms for downloading an app from a website. I actually do that with Riverside. If I test a beta version of the Riverside app, we actually use the Microsoft App Center, which lets you distribute apps. And on your iPhone, if you go to like settings, general developer mode, you can actually I get sent a link from the guys who develop our iOS app. I load that link in Safari on my iPhone. I hit download app and it just installs the app right from the website. And so, you know, this is a mechanism that exists here in the US too. It's just relegated to like enterprise use cases and developer stuff like that. But I will say it's kind of cool just to be able to go to a website, hit download, and then it installs your stuff. So curious what apps and games actually do this that are worthwhile for people, and I, you know, makes them download it directly. So yeah.
And Stephen, if all of your iCloud stuff and Apple stuff stops working later today, it's probably because of what you just described. I think that was top secret information. You're not supposed to tell people about.
Shoot.
I don't know.
Shoot. Well, speaking of top secret, by the way, Google and incognito mode. That was a good transition. You teed that up. I don't know if you did that on purpose, but that was pretty good.
I'm just going to take credit for it.
take credit for it. So this is kind of old news with some new news that I just read for the first time yesterday. Apparently, if you were using Google Chrome, the very popular web browser, I would say the number one web browser in the world, if you were using incognito mode, you might have thought that your browsing history and your data while you were in incognito mode was not being seen by Google or not being collected. Well, hate to break it to you, but that wasn't the case. For years, even if you were in incognito mode, Google was, at least according to this article and others, was hoovering up your data, saving your search history, all that data. It was basically keeping it out of your web browsing history on your device and from your Google account. But Google themselves was actually still collecting all of that data. It says there's literally millions of people who have quote unquote potentially embarrassing data, thinking they were using Google incognito mode and the data was not being saved. Well, it was. But because of a 2020 class action lawsuit, Google is actually going to be required to delete that data that it collected on millions of users from when they were in incognito mode. So that data, I guess, will be going away. I just wanted to put this out because I kind of wanted to like put Google on blast just a little bit for this, for Google Podcasts, and then later for Google Search. I want to talk in the personal tech area. But this is one of the reasons why I got a little like skittish about using Google Chrome for certain use cases. I used to run them in parallel, like Safari and Google Chrome, mostly because there were some Chrome extensions that like Squarespace used, and it was just a little easier to do it with Chrome. But I remember hearing news about like Google passwords and stuff. And so I stopped saving my passwords in Google Chrome and turned that off. And now I feel like this is just another data point to say, I don't know, Google sometimes does some weird things with their products that is a little privacy concerning.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, Google's decided they should have a web browser because their entire business is based on getting search, you know, people coming to their website to get search. And so they decided they should own part of that stack to make sure that they can't get pushed aside, right? If the only browser that's available is Edge, the default search engine for everyone was going to be Bing, right? If it's right. Safari, I mean, obviously Google is the default search engine on Safari, but part of the reason is because Chrome is so popular that they have, that there's leverage there. And Google, it's weird because one of the things that Google does with Chrome is it's this huge source of information for it because people are, it's able to save this information. And you asked me about this earlier and I realized, I sent you a link. I actually wrote about this lawsuit in 2021. So I did know about it. And it's been a long time that they finally settled it. And so at the time, people were suing because you could use incognito mode. And people think of incognito mode as like using the Tor, you know, like the Tor browser, like where it's
the
like
dark web browser.
Yeah. Well, it's like people think it's like completely encrypted. You're completely private. The same thing is generally true for other browsers that have a private mode. All that that means is that the browser itself won't save your history necessarily. Right. The browser, literally the
and
browser.
It won't cache or cookies.
Yes. Yep. But that doesn't mean that anyone else in the pipeline doesn't have access to that. So for example, it didn't used to be this way, but at the time, because of this lawsuit, Google changed the screen that appears because people would assume that if they're using incognito mode, that meant that if they were at a work, you know, using the work network, that their employer wouldn't know what they were looking for. But that's not true. Again, all of that data is still traveling right through the same pipes. So part of that was if you're typing in searches into Google, Google would still be saving that information about you, right? Even if you're using incognito mode. And so now they've agreed to delete that data and they're trying to make it more clear. But the bottom line is this: private browsing, incognito mode, all that means is that the piece of software, the actual browser, doesn't save your history and do those things. You should just assume that somewhere along the line, someone can still, you know, your ISP. For example, if you use Comcast, Comcast knows everything that you're doing unless you're using a VPN. And so just
right,
just filter that into your brain as you're going through your day and doing things. And I'm not even saying people are going to do nefarious things, but for example, if you're at work and you're doing personal things, assume that someone at work could figure that out, right?
Yes.
Like just assume that. And if, and if that's against your company's policy, maybe don't do it while you're at work. So yeah.
Correct. You know, it was interesting. I was at Podcast Movement last week and I was talking to someone. And I won't say what country they grew up in or where they were or whatever, but I was talking to them, and in the country they grew up, VPNs are like a way of life because the country does not allow certain internet activity by default. And so everyone knows how to use a VPN. And I find it interesting here in the US, VPNs are a thing. And I think it's more kind of in the nerd category when someone's trying to like watch something that's on Netflix UK, but not Netflix US. But if the TikTok ban, which I'm not exactly sure where that is. I mean, I think it still has to be voted on in the House, I believe, or in the Senate, right?
Well, it has not been taken up in the Senate yet.
Has not been taken up in the Senate, right? So we don't know what's happening there yet. But if something like TikTok were banned here in the U.S., I feel like the U.S. would catch up to some of these other countries that kind of just know what a VPN is by default. And especially every high school and middle schooler would be like, oh, okay, so I just install this VPN app and then I can use TikTok? No problem. And it will very quickly become ubiquitous.
But. Well, and that's actually a great example because, for example, at the school where our students attend, the network, so if you're on their Wi-Fi, does not allow you to send images. So you can't post to social media and you can't actually send text messages with an image. So as a parent, if you can imagine if one of us is at a sporting event and we want to send, like if I want to send a photo to my, I have to actually get on a VPN just to send a text message with a photo attached to it or to upload something to Instagram or something. So I mean, there are a lot of kids there because I get a lot of text messages that occasionally include things, you know, that I know that the network, I mean, you can always just disconnect from Wi-Fi if you're on a phone, but there are a lot of kids. Yeah. I think there are a lot more kids who know how to use VPNs than we might think.
That's a good point. All right, a couple of the Google things. Google finally killed Google Podcasts. They announced this months ago, and the date has now passed. So Google Podcasts is gone. David Pierce of The Verge had some strong feelings about that. This is just indicative, again, of, I think, Google's habits. If you are not familiar with the website killed by Google, I highly recommend checking that out. It will be in the show notes, where I'm not sure who curates this website, but it is a running list of all the services and apps and everything that Google has killed over the years. Right now, it's at 294 things that Google has launched and killed. It's pretty wild. You probably have not even heard of some of these, but Google Podcasts has been the latest casualty in Google killing things off. I think it is a shame. One, I love podcasts. I think more podcast apps for more people's preference, the better. The fact that this was like a default podcast app built into Android was an overall positive thing, letting people just say like, oh, I just go to the Google Podcast app on my phone that's already there. I want to listen to podcasts. There are great alternatives. Pocket Cast is on Android. Highly recommend that. I think you can get, I don't know if Castro's on Android, but there's other podcast apps. But the reason why Google did this is because it's really trying to push all of their Android users especially, to use the YouTube Music app for podcasts. Now, I would be curious if we have any listeners or what viewers, which you can do both, who listen or watch this show in YouTube Music. We are in the YouTube Music app. You can actually watch the show and listen to it. That's actually, it was a huge topic at the Podcast Movement conference I was at because people don't really understand how to get their show into YouTube Music because it is a slightly laborious topic. If you're not posting full-length videos already to a YouTube channel, there's this RSS import feature and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, you know, this wasn't like really updated often, the Google Podcast app. It didn't really seem like Google was putting a ton of effort into it anyways, but to have killed it is kind of a shame. And again, just a little indicative of some of their practices that I want to talk about Google search actually in a second. I'm not going to save it for the end of the show because I want to talk about it in this Google section. But I don't know. How did you feel about it? Or I don't know if you read David's piece, but
I did read David's piece at The Verge, and I've never used Google Podcasts because even on an Android device, if I'm going to listen, I do have Pocket Casts on because I use Pocket Casts on my iPhone as well. Also, you can listen to almost any podcast in Spotify, which is available on both platforms as well. So if you know, there are other podcast options. There are two things I think about this. One, yes, the Killed by Google website, hilarious, because when you scroll through it, first of all, there will be a lot of things you had no idea existed, but there are also like a lot of things that essentially sound like they're all the same thing, which is part of Google's problem. Right?
There was like 10 different texting apps. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Allo, but there's a whole bunch of different things on there. I mean, just if you were to like do a find, you know, a search for like the word YouTube, there's like YouTube gaming, YouTube video, YouTube calling, like all these different things. And I think part of what happens at YouTube, and I think that this is part of what David was saying in his pieces, it's like Google will start a thing, they get really excited about it, they'll talk about how it's going to change the world, and then another part of the company decides to do the same kind of thing, and now you've got two products, and it's like at one point they realize, well, YouTube has a much bigger brand, we should push everyone to that, and by the way, YouTube is the thing we can monetize, right? Because they're not making any money off Google Podcasts. And at some point they're just like, well, let's just push everybody, but YouTube Music is not the same. Like, if the thing you wanted to do is sit down to listen to a podcast, you don't think, oh, I'll go to YouTube Music. You could watch this podcast on YouTube, right? You probably, you know, if you're watching it, that's where you're watching it. But you don't necessarily think, let me just open up YouTube Music, which I actually think, so it's funny to me every time I look at like the fact that we have a YouTube Premium subscription, it actually shows up in the App Store as a YouTube Music subscription. I'm like, oh, technically we're subscribed to YouTube Music, and as a result, we're getting YouTube. I don't know. It is very confusing. YouTube, I mean, we've already established, because I can never remember the name of any of the Google devices in our house, that Google is, except for the Pixel. The Pixel is the only one I can tell you the name of it without having to like trip over myself. But this list just shows you that like sometimes trying a million different things doesn't make a lot of sense. And Google has this, the Google Reader to me is the classic example, because that was such a great service at the time when there were just not that many RSS readers. And Google just, I think, was it 2011 maybe, was just like, nope, we're done. We're just not doing this anymore. And that wasn't because they were trying to get you to like use YouTube RSS feeds. It was just like, well, we're just not going to do this anymore. In this case, I just think this having a podcast app can't cost Google that much. Just like, leave
I'm sure there was one person. Like, it wasn't updated pretty much ever.
Right.
Like, I don't
know. It's essentially just an RSS reader. So it doesn't need to be, honestly, it doesn't have to be updated that often. It just, it was functional and it worked.
This is the conspiracy theory that we need to
propagate. They hate RSS.
Google hates RSS. That's
which problem. Honestly could be true, because if you subscribe to an RSS feed, you don't need Google to find the thing. So maybe I don't
know. This is honestly, like, I jokingly said conspiracy theory, but I do feel like Google Reader, now Google Podcasts, there actually are like hidden RSS feeds for YouTube channels, which I use in different shortcuts. But I could totally, like, Google does not make it easy to find that. Either. No. Like, they don't really want you to use that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think this is a valid theory. I hope someone writes a think piece on it. Google hates RSS. I think that is actually the case. So I have one last thought on the podcast thing, and maybe we could talk about Google search then, because I think that also is related. I love podcasts. I've been listening to them for a long time. I've looked at Spotify and how they integrate podcasts, obviously YouTube Music, because we're on all the platforms, I need to know what it looks like. I do not think combining music listening and podcast listening in the same app makes for a good user experience.
Right.
And this is going to be the theme of the show now, this episode, from now to the end of the episode, because good user experience, good UI is important. Podcast is already a medium that struggles with discovery because it's not algorithmically driven. Apple Podcast does a good job of trying to surface shows that it thinks you might like in the Apple Podcasts app. But on a whole, finding a new podcast that you would like to hear is difficult. And muddying that experience with the entire music library of YouTube Music and Spotify, I don't think is great for podcast creators or podcast listeners. Again, like, it's, I'm in there. I go to Spotify to see what the podcasts look like in there and YouTube Music. And it is not as seamless as having a dedicated podcast app. That is my opinion. I also think Apple should bring Apple Podcasts to Android. They already have Apple Music. You can download Apple Music on Android. You can sign up. I know Apple's doing that probably for the services revenue and all that kind of stuff, but do that for Apple Podcasts too, because there's lots of Apple Podcast subscriptions. You can subscribe to this show directly in Apple Podcasts. Yeah. I would love for that to be an option for users on Android as well. And I think, as you could look on my YouTube channel, that the Apple Podcast is actually a good podcast listening app. It has improved a lot in the last couple of years. Pocket Cast is also great. Don't get me wrong. You can use that too. But I think it would be valuable for Apple Podcasts to be on Android for the sake of the subscriptions and just having another good app. There's now a hole. Like Google Podcasts is not on Android anymore. I think it is a hole that could be filled with the Apple Podcasts app. And that's me being passionate about podcasts.
Well, and here's the thing. Well, I was just looking through that killed by Google list. You know, they killed off not that long ago. They killed off like Stadia, which is basically like an RSS feed for games, right? Essentially. I mean, it's not exactly, but like they're killing all of these things. But yeah. If you look at the strategy, it's really interesting because wasn't it like 2019 when Apple took iTunes, which was probably its top, one of its top three brands, right? iTunes is a thing. Right. Everyone knew what iTunes right. was. And I don't right. know anybody who didn't like generally love iTunes. Like what, there's a lot of nostalgia attached to the fact that like, right. oh, I could just have all my music, but they split it into music, podcasts, and TV, right?
Yeah.
And they don't monetize Apple Podcasts. I mean, they do have ads. I guess there's search ads in Apple Podcasts maybe, but other than that, it's not.
But the subscriptions, they take a cut of the subscription.
Well, that's true. You're right. They do that, but like they don't. You don't have to pay to use the service. There's no service right. of Apple Podcasts like there is Apple TV Plus or Apple Correct. Music or whatever. And granted, Apple's position on podcasts has always been sort of like the Switzerland of podcasts or whatever. Like right. they've always just been that we'll make it happen kind of thing. Right. But it is a very interesting difference between those two strategies where Google's constantly trying to throw a bunch of things against the wall. As soon as one of them sticks, it's trying to figure out how do I incorporate this into the area where we're making money, right? And right. I just think like, you know, I do like the podcast app. I don't use it for various reasons anymore. I tried for a while. It's gotten way better. There are just a couple things that I couldn't live without that I really liked about podcasts. But the point is, Apple's making a very good podcast app. It's never going to go anywhere. And it doesn't need to be, you know, this would be like if Apple was like, oh, we have a music app, we have a TV. Let's just make them all part of one. And Spotify does that, obviously. But it is my brain breaks every time I go in and I'm like, oh, wait, in order to search just music or podcasts, there's like a small little bubble tag exactly. that you have to like, I'm like, that is the weirdest interface. I don't know. I agree with you.
It's ironic that, as you mentioned, like how Apple moved from the master app of iTunes and broke them out. And now YouTube and Spotify are doing the opposite and trying to integrate them all. Being that Apple has been in the game for much longer than both of them when it comes to like music and podcasts.
Right.
I think there's a reason why Apple is making them separate.
Yeah. and there's probably somebody would give us the obvious pushback, which is they charge for Apple Music. There's a subscription there. They charge for Apple TV Plus. There's a different subscription there. You mentioned, there are subscriptions for various podcasts. If they were all in one app, it would be harder for them to monetize them individually. I get that. Like, I understand that. But the point is they are not trying to take the Apple TV Plus app and cram other like random things. Like it's just, I don't know. I think it's a mistake for Google. Obviously Google knows way better than us how many people were using it. The problem with big companies like this is you could have, I don't know, a million super passionate fans for your Google podcast app, but on the scale of a company like Google, that's just not big enough, right? Because they have what, 2 billion Gmail users. So it's like, who's still working on that stupid million user app over there, right? Like, but at the same time, it's like, actually though, those people really liked it and were getting a lot of value from it and it couldn't have been costing you anything. Just leave it alone.
Right. I will, one counterpoint to the fact of like Apple's not shoving things in other things, the Apple TV app, especially on like physical Apple TVs, ever since I downloaded the Apple Sports app and actually chose a couple teams to follow just so I could actually test the sports app, it has totally ruined my up next queue in Apple TV, because now every time I turn on any Apple TV, my up next queue is like shoved down and whatever sports games are currently playing or ones to follow now take over. Like it takes over like the top part when you're on like the home screen part. And then when it's just the up next like list, it just shoves whatever games from the teams that I follow in that list. And I'll be honest, I don't like that. And I'm not exactly sure how to stop it. I don't know if I have to go like unfavorite the teams or I don't know. So like sports as a whole, I do feel like has been kind of shoved into Apple TV. And I understand they're trying to make the push MLB Friday Night Baseball. They have Major League Soccer. I understand they're trying to push certain things, but that experience I find has not been great recently. So
yeah, I agree. At least you don't actually watch sports, because what I thought you were going to say is that if you're watching sports, like in YouTube TV and you're watching a live sporting event, the Apple TV will also always pop up in the corner.
Yes.
You know, close game between Golden State and, you know, the Spurs. And you're like, yes, it is. I see it. I'm watching it right now.
Literally.
Why are you trying to get me to switch to this game that I'm already watching? That to me is the best.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right. So I want to talk about Google search itself because I have some thoughts about it. But before we do, I just want to take a moment and thank those who support the show directly. The show is brought to you by you, which number one, if you listen to this show and you either make an app, a service, or you would like to sponsor an episode of Primary Technology, reach out to us. There's an email in the show notes, and we'd love to hear from you to have you as a future sponsor on the show. Or you could support the show directly. $5 a month gets you ad-free version, meaning this section's cut out, and also you get bonus episodes every week. Jason and I don't know if we're going to argue about UX design or talk about travel gear. We might do both. I want to talk about that. And you'll listen, you get access to all the previous bonus episodes and all future ones when you subscribe. And we'd love to hear what topics you'd like to hear in those bonus episodes as well. So thank you to those who support the show directly. But if you can't, 5-star rating and review an Apple Podcast. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're about to hit 600 subscribers. The goal is 1,000. I don't know when the goal to hit 1,000 is, but sometime this year, we'd like to hit 1,000. But go subscribe, youtube.com/@primarytechshow, and support the show. Because we love doing it, and we appreciate your support. Google search. There was a recent Decoder episode with Nilay Patel, and he talked about Google search. It was a very good episode. I don't know if we covered it on this podcast or if it was actually before we launched the show, but Google did have a deal recently with Reddit, and it was going to, correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, train Google Gemini, their large language model, on Reddit content to help serve results. Is that accurate?
That's pretty much it's like a $60 million deal for them to use Reddit's content in its large language model. Yes,
right. So you know, I listened to this episode. I knew that was part of, like, in the background of what was going on, and so I have Google search set as my default search engine, like many people do, on my iPhone, on the web, and in Safari. And I have found, I'm curious your anecdotal experience, I have found also that Google search has become less useful overall. I find that 80-ish% of my searches will have a Reddit result, like a link to Reddit as a result from my query, as like the first result under the sponsored ones. So you got, like, you know, 3 or 4 sponsored search results. That's Google Ads. And then I see like a Reddit post and a Quora post. Core is like the online community, you know, question answering or whatever. And I get this a lot, even when I'm searching for like data, like actual data, you know, that I want. I find news is a little different. Like, you know, when the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed in Maryland, which is very tragic. You know, if you search for that, that's typically going to surface like news sources up at the top. And, you know, you see a video, obviously it's going to put YouTube results up there at the top. But when it comes to just like general knowledge or questions about something, honestly, this is going to come into our UX discussion. I had Googled, how do I link text in the Notion iPhone app? I had Googled it. And the results I got, the first two results were from Reddit and Quora, neither of which gave me the answer I was looking for.
You should have just texted me, dude. I answered your question in 5 seconds.
Because I finally complained about it on social media, which is the faster way to get the best answer, apparently. And someone did tell me that's how you do it. But
if only you knew someone with a tech podcast, Steven.
Listen,
could have answered the question for you.
I know you probably knew. I was like, well, we're going to talk about that later.
All right.
But don't get me going on it yet, okay? Because there's a mini rant about that. But I have also, yeah, I have found, like Nilay on Decoder was saying, and just I think anecdotal experience, that Google search, I think, is degrading. And as far as like the quality of results and maybe usefulness, and I'm not going to say I'm looking forward to this change, but I am curious if the AI-powered future of Google search, and maybe even the AI-powered future of using things like Spotlight and Siri on Apple devices, if we now need that because of the changes in Google search and also the huge wave of AI-generated content, which is not good content, but because of that SEO-optimized AI-generated content is now everywhere, it also muddies up, you know, internet searches like that. So I don't know, what's been your experience using this kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think Google search has gotten worse in some obvious ways, right? Like, it used to be that you'd see one sponsored post above the 10 blue links. Right. And now there are times when you have to scroll all the way down below the fold before you get past the Google's just getting greedy.
Yeah.
That's one thing. So I think it's objectively, yes, Google's search is getting worse. I think part of the problem that when people say is Google search getting worse, what they are really experiencing is that the internet is just full of garbage because people are trying to figure out how can they rank for Google search, even if but they're not trying to do that in an effort to answer people's questions. They're trying to do that in an effort to capture traffic so that they can then sell you ads and that kind of stuff. It's just a traffic source for monetization. So the incentives are just completely wonky, right? There was a time when you could search for things and you might find the one person's niche. What did we decide? I don't know. Their blog that's about...
Not Nietzsche. Nietzsche is somebody else. This is just
Their hyper-focused blog on whatever the topic is, and you could be like, right. Oh, that's the thing. And I think that was one of the things that they were talking about in the Decoder episode. Yes. I think Mia Soto, who is like their platform reporter, replaced Casey Newton, I think. Yeah. They're just talking about like these really small publications who do a really good job of answering certain types of questions that it's so much harder for them to surface those results. And I think that it's a function of the internet has just turned into a complete wasteland. It's absolutely going to get worse with AI. 100%, because the friction, you no longer have to pay a person to crank out all of this stuff. You can just, you know, pump it out of a computer to do that. But I think it's super unfortunate because I was looking through my history real quick here, because there were some searches that I had done recently where there was zero chance I was going to get a good answer. Like absolutely no answers whatsoever that were useful. But I'm telling you, there was, you know, tons and tons and tons of links to sites that are just maybe tangentially related to the topic I was looking for, but absolutely we're not going to try to give me an answer. The best example of this is like search for any recipe and you have to read a 1600 word blog post how exciting it is to make this food before you get to the recipe. And that's because
the great grandmother started this recipe in Italy.
And it's because Google SEO for a long time has incentivized longer content as being more authoritative. So you had to like write
more search terms,
a bunch of nonsense garbage. And it's like, no, really what I wanted was a white page with, you know, 150 words, and those words should be 1 cup sugar, 3 cups flour,
just bullet points, whatever. I just wanted a bullet point.
I just want a recipe. Yeah. And so I don't know that is like Google as a search engine necessarily getting worse, because it's the results that it is returning, I think, are lower quality, but I think that's because that is what the internet has become.
And during that episode, they really put a CNET on blast, which I found interesting. I was a longtime follower of CNET. I'll still watch some of their videos sometimes when they come up on YouTube. Brian Tong, used to be at CNET, did the Apple Byte. I was following him at that point. But they talked about how CNET now basically has an entire division generating content like today's mortgage interest rates.
Yep.
So that they have an article. Yeah. Every single day, this way, trying to game the Google search to be one of the top results on just random stuff. And they'll have articles that are like the best mattress or whatever, or like the price of green beans. I don't know. Just like random stuff.
Yep.
I don't know if some of it is AI generated now. If not, I'm sure it would be soon, because it'd be way cheaper to do that. But that kind of practice, even from a quote-unquote at least previously reputable news source, is muddying the waters of the internet, where something like Google search, not only is Google changing Google search to be less useful, but now the amount of stuff to sift through in that search term is it's just becoming untenable to surface the good results. And so I think it is a combination of both. I have two thoughts. Maybe AI powered search will help. I don't know. That almost feels like trying to put out fire with more fire. Maybe it's possible. I don't know. But just the whole thing. Also, like, I think of companies like Wirecutter, which for a time, if listeners and viewers remember Wirecutter, like if you ever wanted to buy a product, whether it was a toaster oven, a vacuum, a TV, you just go to the Wirecutter and you search and you get one thing. And that was the Wirecutter shtick when it first came out. It was like,
yep,
we're going to say, buy this one product. This is the vacuum to get. You don't have to think about anything else. If you want the best vacuum, this is it. And now it was purchased by the New York Times. And now the Wirecutter basically suggests like 18 different products. And they're like, well, if you're talking about shag carpet, and maybe there's a place for that, but it's missing that just give me the answer. And as we all become more time constrained, I think that that would actually be a more valuable proposition to say, here's the one thing rather than here's all the things. So we'll see. I'm not optimistic about AI fixing it, but maybe AI search will at some point. The second thing, though, and this is my more optimistic take, is I am optimistic about the creator economy in this new era of AI-generated garbage and search losing its effectiveness. Because I do think people are going to be less trusting of their search results, and even websites whose whole shtick is to recommend things, I think is going to be less valuable. I do think people will start moving a little bit towards, who is the person whose voice that I trust in this area? When it comes to like home theater, there's, I forget the YouTube channel, I don't know if it's Digital Trends or something. There's a guy that talks about home theater stuff, that when the HomePod or Sonos comes out, I want to hear what he says. MKBHD is another prime example. Like when it's a phone or a laptop or whatever, a car, I actually want to hear what MKBHD has to say about it. And so as we move into this new era, I'm more optimistic about the creator economy and more of this like personality driven basis. Like I'm thankful that some people see me as like the smart home person. And there's several smart home people that are amazing at it. Shane Watley, other channels that people trust for those kind of recommendations. And so I think there's going to be even more need for that style of reviews and recommendations. And so I think that's going to be great, at least for the next few years, but it is just going to make, I just want to know how to link text in Notion a lot. The answer is a lot harder to find unless you ask your podcast co-host, but
yeah, that would have been your smart move. But I was trying to find, I was just like, it's weird. You can go to your search history and I was just looking through the things, which is, it's just weird for a lot of reasons, but it's like, why was I searching for that? You know, what building did Kurt Vonnegut Sr. design that was later rotated? I don't know why I was looking for that, but nice. That was a real thing that I was trying to figure
out.
But I was what is a soup? Why was I looking for all of these things? Anyway, it was for a different
Were you podcast. Having a conversation with your kids about his cereal soup?
Actually, we were having a conversation with adults about his cereal soup. And it's not because you don't cook the cereal in the debate. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're not going to go there this time. But I was trying to find a thing. It's like, what is the best thing for this? And all you could find are these like buying guides from places like CNET and Engadget and whatever. And not a single one of them actually addressed the question, because every single one of the answers they gave you was an affiliate link. And so they had to find a way to cram the like thing into the, you know, the answer. It's like, oh no, we know that what you really want is the answer should be like, use like, I don't even know. I wish I could find what it was, because it was so blatantly, and Google is actually surfacing those things as the best answer, but no one who's looking for it is wanting to sign up for Salesforce or like whatever. It's like, that's not what I was asking for. I just wanted to know, like, is there a way to, you know, what? I don't even know, but it's just, that is a function of where I actually think that is on Google, because it shouldn't even be looking at that information and being like, yes, this is a good answer for it. So,
right. Yeah. So I'm optimistic about the creator economy. I'm less optimistic about how useful this is. And this is why I am actually kind of excited about the Humane AI pin.
Which
I should be getting in like a week. They said April 11th was the delivery date. But honestly, for something like just simple queries, I don't know if I'm going to ask it for like product recommendations, but if I'm just looking for a simple answer about something, maybe it's history, whatever, I am curious if this AI-powered little device is going to be able to offer a more useful, hopefully accurate answer for my queries than even Google search, which seems like a wild time when you're looking for better alternatives than Google search. I mean, it's just, I don't know, halcyon days when Google search was just like, there was no competition. and now to see it just kind of slowly degrade, I mean, it's just wild. It's wild. So
yeah.
Killed by Google search.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, all right, let us know what you think about Google search and everyone's tangential experience. But did you have any final thoughts before we go to?
I think I've said all of my thoughts.
Not yet, okay. Well, let's do a semi-lightning round here. We're never good at lightning rounds, but we're going to try. Spotify is raising its prices. It's going to be raising $1 to $2 depending on the market. Will be happening here in the U.S. as well. I think I already know the answer, but do you use Spotify or Apple Music?
So we use both at our house, actually.
Oh.
And I tried to cancel Spotify this week, and we realized that it was actually a service. It was probably the service that the most people in our house use the most often. And so we are going to keep paying for Spotify. I tried to switch people over to Apple Music because we already get that.
Right. I was going to say, you're probably an Apple one.
Well, I have two subscriptions to Apple Music because our Verizon gives it to us for free, and then the Apple One bundle includes it. Anyway. Don't try to parse that out. It's anyway. So, but there are some things that, well, actually one of the big ones is that Spotify makes it easier. And actually my daughter was telling me this, for her to listen to music that would be otherwise unavailable because it's like marked explicit or something like that, where it serves up automatically the non-explicit version. Whereas Apple Music is harder to, like, it just won't play stuff. So, none of that made sense to me except for good. I'm glad you're not listening to the super explicit music. So I guess we'll keep paying for Spotify. I want to know what you guys use at your house, though. I'm sure I probably know the answer. It's increasing the price because it has to cover the cost of audiobooks. But it's like, who cares? Why are you putting audiobooks into Spotify?
Stop shoving more things into things.
And then making me pay more money. Now, I guess there was something about how if you want the basic tier that doesn't have the audiobooks, maybe it will stay the same or something. But it's like, why are you just making this more confusing for a thing that... who cares? First of all, like, I'm a writer. You know, audiobook, great. I got no beef with that. But like, Audible... good app. Like, you can get that. Like, there is a thing for that. I don't think Spotify needs to try to cram away. And again, it's the same thing as what the problem with Google. Everyone is just trying to figure out ways to monetize and grow and do all this, which, whatever, that's capitalism. I'm all for it. Like, if we can, we would love to have six sponsors every single episode. We would love to monetize this. Don't get me wrong, but it's like, you decided to add audiobooks, something that I don't think anybody cares about, and now you're going to charge everyone more because those are expensive. Experience? Anyway, so what do you use? Do you use the audiobook feature of Spotify, or do you just listen to music in Apple Music?
Apple Music. Okay. And I actually do audiobooks in Apple Books just because I'm going to be using Apple devices for a long time, I think. And the Apple Books experience is pretty good, and it syncs across all my Apple devices, and it's easy. And I can share them with my family easily. So yeah, we use Apple Music, Apple Books. I will say my son has Spotify for this reason only. When he wanted to make a video or when he was making podcasts, sometimes he wanted to use music from a song. And the Apple Music app, if you screen record while music is playing, the recording is just blank. Like, it obviously doesn't let you record that. Apparently, you can play music in Spotify, do a screen recording, and it will record the music. And he would then take that screen recording, strip the audio out, take that into a video editor, and do all this stuff. And honestly, that level of resourcefulness, I'm all for it. Go for it.
I do think that's the kind of thing, again, you're not supposed to say in a podcast because someone is now going to close that loop.
I know, someone's probably going to close
it. You ruined it for everyone, Steven.
Spotify. If you're there for Spotify, just forget. I neuralize you. Just forget the last 30 seconds. Just forget it. But that's the only reason why they will sometimes use Spotify. Although that clean, explicit thing is real, though. It is hard sometimes to find the clean version of a song, even if it actually does exist in Apple Music.
Yeah.
It's hard to find, for sure. Also, the TikTokification of the internet, which I don't think is a positive thing, but Facebook is testing a new full-screen video player that is basically another TikTok clone. You know, Facebook is a little bit like Google, whereas there should be a Killed by Facebook website. Maybe one exists, I'm not sure. But I get it, experimenting like this. A lot of apps are trying this because of the popularity of TikTok. Probably also trying to prepare for if TikTok gets banned in the US, that maybe everyone will hopefully flock to Facebook, which I don't think would happen. But I don't know. I don't like the TikTokification of the internet. I don't think we need a bunch of clones. You know, Facebook, I don't know if you remember, Jason, Facebook said it was going to be a podcast player at one point, and Facebook actually made it where you could ingest RSS into your Facebook page and you could listen to podcasts, and it was the worst podcast listening experience you could ever have. I actually made a whole video about it.
Anyway. Remember when Facebook told all the news organizations that they should just pivot to video, and so they all spent a lot of money building studios and hiring all these video journalists, and then Facebook was like, never mind, and now they're all going bankrupt. So I don't know that anyone...
BuzzFeed?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're all going bankrupt. Yeah. So I'm not sure that anybody should listen to that. What's weird about this, I thought about this a lot because I'm trying to figure out, what is the crossover of people who are into TikTok and also still use Facebook? And it actually, I didn't necessarily know this because I think of TikTok as being, you know, my teenagers.
Sure.
But it also, I from my understanding, the second largest population of people using TikTok are people like my parents' age. They just scroll through stuff. And they also use Facebook. So maybe this actually makes sense, because my thought was, if TikTok goes away, everyone's just going to use Instagram Reels. Like, they've already solved this problem, but there's probably a lot of people who actually use TikTok who aren't using Instagram Reels, right? They are just using the Blue app. And so maybe this makes sense, but the format of the video, actually, there's a really funny point in this story. I think it's in this particular story where, you know, yeah, you can turn your phone. They're just reinvented Quibi, right? Like, you can turn your phone and it just automatically rotates for you. It's like, they just reinvented Quibi. This is great. But I think that this is a symptom of, like, what TikTok has done, set aside the algorithm, which it's the most effective algorithm on the internet right now. It is the best at dialing in what people want. People constantly, I mean, every day I see someone is like, no, their algorithm's terrible. Look what's in my For You page. I'm like, you shouldn't share that, because
if you're not proud of it, don't share it.
You should just reset your account then and start over if you think there's a problem. Because anyway, but I think that it is conditioning people to have such a short attention span at things that it is sort of like the TikTokification of the internet isn't just about like scrolling vertical video. It's about like you have 2 seconds and that's the attention span people have to decide. And I think there was this, I think it was maybe an interview with Mr. Beast talking about this and how like YouTube creators have gone down this, like, that's the way that videos are being edited. You know, they're like 2 seconds.
Retention editing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And so like that is the TikTokification of the internet. And I think that is the thing that at some point, I don't know how far we can push that before people's brains just like start to melt out of their head.
Which, to that point, Mr. Beast and other creators on YouTube actually are saying that it is shifting back, at least on the YouTube platform, away from retention editing, and people actually finding just kind of really transparent, authentic videos. You actually interviewed him, but Ali Abdaal, who recently wrote a book on productivity, you know, you look at some of his videos and it is not retention editing. And retention editing means like you're changing what's on screen every second and a half. It is extremely just like, you know, the
lots
visual
of loud
is constantly
noises and bright lights and cuts and stuff.
All that stuff. And so there is a response actually away from that now, at least on YouTube, not necessarily on TikTok just yet. I also feel like TikTok shot themselves in the foot with the TikTok shop. I don't know if you scroll TikTok. I do scroll TikTok at least once a day. And there was just a wave where every other video was someone promoting something from the TikTok shop. And it really degraded that experience as well, which, you know, it's just amazing to me, like how many platforms, like I understand profitability, trying to make money doing this stuff, but ruining the core competency of your platform for the sake of a few more dollars. I know we just talked about Google, talked about TikTok. I don't know. It's a fascinating time. I guess it's grasping at straws, maybe just trying to figure out the next stage of growth. But
well, there was a time when Instagram moved the post button, which was bottom center, and put the shopping button there because they knew that that's the point where people tapped the most and they wanted to control what they got to. They were trying to capitalize on that motor memory, and they eventually had to change it back because people are like, this is terrible. I came to Instagram to look at people's cats, not to buy some influencer's shoes, right? Like, and they had to eventually change it back.
Right. They did. Yeah. So anyway, it's the internet. Very quickly, Meta is now requiring an age verification to use the Meta VR headset. Yep. I forget, what is the age? Is it 13 to 17?
Yep. So they're going to adjust the experience based on the age of the person. So there's not necessarily a minimum age for using the device, but for example, if you're a 13 to 17 year old, like people won't be able to find your profile if they're searching through other people's profiles and stuff like that. And so they're going to control it. The reason I thought that the story was interesting is that, you know, Congress dragged a bunch of the social media companies the problem is Congress did not drug them.
Oh, that's true. Dragged.
So I was like trying to figure out what the right form of that verb was. They dragged them in front of Congress to pressure them about how they're going to get all, you know, because in theory, you're not supposed to have a social media account in this country until you're like 13. But obviously like that's really hard to enforce. And the platforms, especially Meta, because they don't want to be responsible for it, are saying that it should be Apple and Google because they control the app stores. Theoretically, it would be a lot easier to set the age on a device and have that determine whether or not you could download a certain app. Obviously, there's ways around that. I thought it was interesting that Meta is admitting that in this case, like, they're having to do that kind of control. And maybe this actually makes their argument, because this is a hardware thing, right? They are right. saying that you have to verify your age using this headset on the hardware level.
Right.
And that will determine the kind of experience that you will have. Because I think that, you know, you and I are both parents. Our older daughter, our daughters are both teenagers. You know, they use apps. You know, it's real hard to keep a teenager from using Instagram if you try, you know, and so I think what Meta is acknowledging, and I think we should all acknowledge, is like, teenagers are way more resourceful than we are. You and I are very tech savvy. Teenagers are not necessarily more tech savvy. They're just resourceful. They will find a little tiny crack and then they will just figure a way to wiggle through it eventually.
Exploit it.
The tenacity is just mind blowing. If a teenager wants a thing, they'll figure out how to make it happen. So this seems like Meta is, what they're trying to do is they're trying to add a layer of protection. It just gets weird when you have to start like verifying age, because like that article mentioned that if you accidentally put in the wrong age, the only way to verify your age now will be to like upload your driver's license. I just don't think we want to live in a world where using internet platforms and services requires you to upload your driver's license.
Yeah, no. I actually ran into this because my middle son wanted to have a YouTube channel where he like streamed video games. So I was like, yeah, we could do that. I don't know if, you know, want you like engaging with all the comments, but we can at least, you know, I'll let you stream. And there's that 13 plus age limit for Google accounts. So I couldn't like create a Google account for him with a YouTube channel to stream. I had to like create a channel under my thing. Anyway, it does get a little messy. But Apple Vision Pro, Apple says actually don't even, like, it's not for people under 13. Apple's just straight up like,
yeah.
And even like the lenses like won't even move close enough, I think, for some ages for it to work. So anyway, all right, I'm gonna skip to the solar eclipse so then we can get to personal tech.
Perfect. Perfect.
Monday, April 8th. We have a total solar eclipse happening. It'll be visible here in the U.S. along a trajectory. I think it's like, let's see, down like Texas, like Dallas, Texas. I'll have totality, Little Rock, Arkansas, through Indianapolis, and then all the way through Buffalo. Jason's near totality. I think I'm going to get like, 70, 50% maybe. But yeah, solar eclipse.
I'm getting a t-shirt that just says near totality and people will have no idea what that means. But yeah, I think they were saying we should be like 97% where we live in Michigan. So that's great. We'll probably try to, you know, it's a weird Easter gift. But at Easter, I think my mom handed out eclipse glasses to everyone. So that everyone
nice. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So we have those. We're prepared for it. I'm excited to take, like, I think it, although we're supposed to have pretty cloudy weather, so we may not see anything here. Oh. But if we did, it would be fun. I've heard a lot of people talking about like, well, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Want to get photos. I did just want to say, you know, as someone who ran in a previous life, was a professional photographer, you know, your iPhone's probably not going to do a great job of getting a photo of this. You really have to be using either an SLR or a mirrorless camera. And if you're going to do that, I recommend that you go on Amazon and you buy a solar filter, right? You know, because I mean this sincerely, you're going to fry the inside of your computer if you don't. I mean, of your camera if you don't. There's actually a great YouTube video where someone did this. I think 2017 was the last total solar eclipse.
Yeah.
And they just set it up on a tripod and they just pointed it at the sun and it took like a minute and started smoking like the camera. Because you stick a 200mm, you know, lens on the front of that thing and it's just amplifying what's coming into it. Yeah. It's just amplifying it and it will destroy your device. And definitely don't, if you have like an SLR, for example, do not look through the viewfinder because that is a straight path of that magnified. If you're using a mirrorless, you can look at the screen because that's just a screen representation. But I just wanted to throw that out there. Spend $35, get yourself a solar filter, stick it on the front of your lens. You'll have a much better experience trying to take a photo of it and don't look directly at the sun.
And if anyone is still wondering about the flatness or roundness of the earth, actually that's lunar eclipse, I think.
Is anybody still wondering about that? I don't
know. You never know. But anyway, I think the one in 2017, the totality was close to Florida maybe. But we all went outside and like, it's pretty kind of weird experience where it just kind of gets dark in the middle of the day. And you're like, oh, this is like all those disaster movies I like watching.
It's like living in Alaska 6 months of the year.
That is true. You know, I found this random podcast about Antarctica. There's like these two scientists and they talk about Antarctica and like what it's like living down there. I find that fascinating. Like,
yeah,
amazing. For a personal tech, let's talk about travel tech because you almost traveled. to the
I traveled back and forth between my bedroom and my bathroom because I got a little sick, but I was supposed to go a little farther than that, but it did not work out. And I'm really, by Tuesday last week, I was so thankful that I did not, that I was not in a hotel room in Vegas. Although they probably would have been very prepared for the condition that I was in. They probably would see that very often.
As calling, half the people in Vegas.
Calling room service for Gatorade and Red Bull probably would have been totally normal. They would have been like, yep, we know what's wrong.
We know, we've dealt with this before. So you almost traveled. I did travel to Podcast Movement in Los Angeles, and so that was a lot of fun. And I'll share, you know, they're basically like two pieces of tech. First of all, I'll just mention, listen, Apple Vision Pro. Okay, I know everyone's going to wonder. You know, it's cool when traveling, you know, watching a movie or whatever. I didn't take it out once in the hotel because when I get back to my hotel room, I usually like do a little bit of work and whatever. And it's just the friction of getting it all out. The Waterfield travel case was great with it as far as like compactness. It fit in my backpack, which I also use a Waterfield backpack. They have not sponsored the show. I have no affiliate links.
Hey, I got a Waterfield gear bag right here, so we should
talk about it. There you go. So anyway, you know, Apple Vision Pro is cool when traveling. Is probably the best use case for it, but I don't know. It's still really big and heavy. It took up a lot of room in my bag.
Yeah, so the premise of this is we're just going to talk real quickly about the stuff that we take with us when we're traveling, right? The tech that we take with us. Okay. I don't know if we made that clear or not. We just started talking about it. I just thought I would clarify, so yeah.
I'll start with this. I don't know if we want to go back and forth or what, but charger-wise, I recently got this Qi 2 charger from Anker, and this I find has been the best yet. I still love the MagSafe Duo for the thinness and lightness, but, you know, it's old, it's lightning. This one from Anker, USB-C here on the side, opens up like this. Charge your phone on here, Qi 2, 15-watt charging. AirPods can charge on this back thing. And then the Apple Watch charger, boom, flips out. Right there at the bottom, charge three devices in one, USB-C. This is my go-to travel charger now, and it was great. Boom.
Yeah, I actually still use the MagSafe Duo. It's still my favorite piece of travel tech. Even though it uses lightning, it's fine. I have one lightning cable. And you know what's great about it is I only use it for one thing. It's literally the only lightning device I carry anymore.
But now, do you have AirPods Max?
I don't have AirPods Max.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I mean, I did at one point. But I much prefer these Bowers & Wilkins PX7s for over-the-ear headphones when I'm traveling. They're not quite as seamless as the whole experience with using the AirPods Max, but they do pair to two devices, which is great. You can have them paired to your computer and your phone, and they switch back and forth. So
when it comes to headphones, AirPods Pro 2, amazing. Use those during the entire trip. I actually brought my AirPods Max just in case. I didn't use them once.
We recorded.
Oh, that's right. You were right. Because we recorded a podcast last week. I was in the hotel room. It was the only wired headphones I had. I had to use the adapter. So you are right. I used it once to record a podcast. Yeah. Otherwise, I did not. But
yeah, I only really use over-the-ear headphones on the plane. And usually only if it's more than a three-hour flight, it's nice. The batteries usually last a little bit longer. And I really like AirPods. I don't know why I'm touching my ear. I don't have AirPods Pro, and I usually do, though. But I really like AirPods Pro for just about everything. But on a plane, especially like if you're going to sleep, I hate the thought of waking up and having it be gone. I'm never going to find it again. So the over-the-ear headphones are great.
I will say for my AirPods Pro 2, which I took, these are the USB-C versions. I did get, and I've used these before, the Comply foam tips.
These look like little ducks sitting in there, honestly.
they do. If you're watching, youtube.com/@primarytechshow, the Comply foam is like earplug material where you can squish it down and then it expands. And I find this never feels loose in my ear. It keeps the AirPods Pro 2 in my ear and I never worry about them falling out. And so Comply foam tips for your AirPods Pro, those are winners. I enjoy that very much.
Great. So what do you pack all of your little, do you have like a gear go bag that you put everything? Yeah. Where did it tuck? Oh, you have the Peak Design one.
This is the Peak Design gear bag. I love it.
I hate it.
You open it up and it has like three like separate compartments, and I have, you know, keep the chargers. I keep the cables. I have little like USB-C to USB-A adapters in there. Peak Design one's awesome. It also has like a little front pouch over here. Which I'll keep little things in the front pocket. The Peak Design one is awesome. And it's,
no, it's not
compact.
It's terrible.
What?
It's not compact at all. It's
what
so
are you talking about? Look at it. Look how
it is so thick.
Look at this. It squishes down.
Do you have anything in it?
I got some cables and a charger in here. So
look at
the
how thin
is,
this one is. This is Waterfield bag, and it is so perfect.
I mean, it does look nice. That looks nice. But here's the thing. So it all depends on what chargers you put in it. And the chargers I usually take with me are like, these ultra slim, like this is an Anker slim charger. And then the other charger I bring, which I bring way too many chargers. I only use like one or two charging bricks, but I bring a bunch of them. The Nomad, if you're going to get one slim charger, this Nomad, it's six. This is 60 watts and it has two USB-C ports on the bottom. 60 watts, two USB-Cs. Look how thin that is. This is the travel charger to get. I really enjoy this one.
See, I have a Nomad one too, but it is not thin, and it's 135 watts.
So that one, I have I have another Anker one, which is thicker. It's more wattage. It has two USB-C ports. This was actually the one I used more often. Oh, I don't know why. I think I just kept it. Oh, this one is also nice for international travel because it actually comes with the international plugs, and you can take the plug in and out. And so I used this when I went to Israel last year, and that's a nice little feature. So I have that, and the other thing I was going to show, I have, these little cord tacos from Ondar. This is nice to keep little cables nicely organized. Do you use any of these cord tacos?
I've never heard that phrase before, a cord taco.
The cord tacos?
No, I don't have any of those, but that's because I keep them all, they each have one little spot. In this bag.
In the bag. Okay.
So, but I do have the international Anker charger that you were just talking about. I don't know where it is, but I do use one. I also have the non-international version of that, which is, this is my main travel charger because it is actually nice and compact and small. And
The other thing I'll say when it comes to batteries, because I was at a conference and your phone battery just dies at a conference. It's just like, you know, one of the physics laws of physics. And so this is the Anker Qi 2 MagSafe battery pack. So you can actually just slap this on the back of your phone and you get 15 watt charging from this battery pack. It also has a screen on the side, which you could see the current percentage of the battery right here. It's a little thick.
That's a chunky boy.
It is, but if you're going to be at a conference, it's 10,000 milliamp hours. So it'll charge your phone like one and a portion's time. So this is cool. Plus you can also connect directly the USB-C to a device to charge, but the one I really enjoy and I use a couple times, the Anker Prime. This thing is not small or compact, but it has two USB-C and one USB-A port. I never use the USB-A, but I use these. It can charge up to 100 watts, so I can plug my MacBook Pro into this battery and charge my MacBook Pro even under full load. And this thing is just, if you never want to have to think about battery life ever, you get one of these.
Also, that's on sale right now at Amazon for $90.
Really? Oh, that's a good deal.
So
this, I have a whole video on it. I'll link the video in the show notes. But this, and they have smaller versions of this too. Like if you want to get like a half size version because you don't need this much milliamp hours, you can get the smaller versions too. But
I think of that as the strip search charger, because when you walk through the TSA with that thing, there's pretty much a guarantee you're about to get accosted.
Yes, but this does.
Hold on. Yes, but. Well, but these are the things we just live with nowadays. It's yes.
I just want to say it is right under the FAA regulation battery that you can take.
It is not under the FAA regulation of looks like a bomb. It still passes the this looks like a bomb.
It is pretty heavy too.
Yeah.
I will say a quick story. When I was working for a travel company, I would do photography and video for them. When I was flying out of Tel Aviv one time, I had like multiple spinning hard drives and like lots of camera gear and stuff. I was searched for a full hour and a half. I had to take every single cable, every single device out of my bag. They had to walk me directly to the gate, otherwise I would have missed the flight. But back in the day when it was all spinning discs and all stuff, they thought I was packing.
Yeah.
Back then. Anyway. Yep. Anything else travel gear that you take that you...
Well, I was just going to say, I genuinely do like the Waterfield
it does look nice,
bag. Right? It's very nice. It's pretty slim. It has enough room for me to throw things in. I have one of these because I prefer to travel with the MacBook Air. So I've got one of these little... This is a lifesaver because it plugs into the two. You can charge. It's got HDMI. You know, you get a couple of USB-A ports, an SD card, all the things you have on a MacBook Pro that you don't get on, get on a MacBook Air. So
I have one of those too.
That's the Hyper. That's the one designed for the iPad Pro.
Yes, use it with your Mac.
Which I also have one of those too. this is a Kickstarter. Yeah. This is the only Kickstarter I think I've ever participated in, except for the whatever Stephen Hackett's, you know, Apple calendar thing.
Or whatever.
But the reason I keep talking about this is I have tried to switch away from this bag many times. I have one of the Peak Design bags, right? Yeah. And I hate it. And I have one of the Bellroy bags, and I hated this one less. The only problem with this one is this does a this doesn't do as good of a job of keeping everything where you put it.
Separating,
right? It's kind of like loose and stuff, and so it's I really wanted to like this one. I really did, but I just every time I just keep going back to this good old faithful Waterfield. It's so well made, but it also it's like it's big enough to keep everything, but it also just it's pretty slim and fits into my backpack pretty nicely. So I also last thing I'll say is I travel with these little X10 Pro Crucial SSD hard drives. This is a 4 terabyte one. These are the most affordable and fast USB hard drives you could find. And if you need a little bit of extra storage while you're traveling, these things run circles around like the Samsung T5 or T7s or whatever, and they're like half the price. So,
well,
gonna throw that out there.
My headphones are not gonna let me reach it, but I actually use the OWC Envoy Pro Mini, which is it looks like a USB stick flash drive. But it's actually like professional, like pro grade SSD speeds, and it has a USB-C and USB-A connector. I use it because I can record ProRes video directly to this from my iPhone because it is fast enough for that. And this is what it looks like. It's literally the size of a USB stick, but you can get it in a 1 terabyte version, and it is it's pretty sweet.
This is the one that you showed a picture of plugged into the back of your Mac Studio. And the cap was off and it looked like you had like a umbilical cord thing going on. I'm like, that is some seriously high tech.
There were some people commenting like, why do you have a switchblade stabbing your Mac Studio or whatever?
I didn't know like if it was like one of those hardware dongles, like, you know what I mean? Like a hardware encryption key plugged in as well. I'm like, wow, what is doing?
It's a good USB stick, you know, terabyte. I'll put a link to that too. But anyway, let us know if you have some travel tech that we missed. We covered on a future show. We're going to go to a bonus episode, and Jason's going to yell at me for not knowing how to use my iPhone.
I'm going to teach Steven how to use an iPhone. You should all subscribe right now for this.
Yeah, subscribe so you can hear Jason lambast me on it. But if you can't subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Go subscribe to youtube.com/@primarytechshow. And of course, we would appreciate if you support the show directly. All the links are in the show notes below. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll catch you next time.